prospect, a choice you won't regret. Call Carrie Raisley today at 865-2442. Let her arrange for you to stop by and discuss your thoughts and needs. That's the Edward L. Raisley Funeral Home in Prospect.
Looks like some rain to continue this afternoon. Cloudy, a high near 49. Tonight's low just down to about 23 with tomorrow's high of 37. And it looks like some sunshine also Saturday and sunshine on Sunday. It looks like Sunday's high just about 38. And then we're back to work on Monday and back to the snow, clouds, and rain. So 49 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank Studios. News time 12:30. Dave Malarkey's up next. Thanks so much for joining us and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. We're heading into the first full weekend of April. We had a split weekend last time around. Last Saturday was March 31st, and of course, last Sunday, Easter Sunday, was April the 1st. But this is the first full weekend in April, even though it looks like and feels like a weekend in February. We've still got the chilly temperatures. We had snow mixed in with chilly rain overnight and for a few hours this morning. That's gone, although it's still very dark and gloomy out there. And the snow will be coming back tonight, and there may be some accumulation overnight tonight into tomorrow morning. About the only thing we have going for us today is it has warmed up a little bit. It's only temporary, so don't get used to it. We're up close to 50 degrees right now, and we'll fall into the low 20s overnight. And over the weekend, wow, high temperatures only in the mid to upper 30s, both Saturday and Sunday. That's about 20 degrees below normal. The average high for Butler on this date is 57. 57. We're looking at highs in the mid-30s, Saturday and Sunday. No relief at the beginning of next week, but ha, I checked the 10-day forecast. Now, if a 3-day forecast is subject to change, believe me, a 10-day forecast is subject to total revision. But it looks like finally by the end of next week, we'll see temperatures warming up a bit. And probably in the 50s on a pretty regular basis for the week after that. So if you're going to hang on for another few days, the first part of next week doesn't look good. It's not going to warm up much. But by the end of next week, next weekend, and then as we head into the middle of April, finally a warm-up. We're not going to be breaking any records, but we should at least be in the 50s. So try to give you something to look forward to, a little bit at least, as we kind of plod through this weather. It really, you know, it doesn't feel like February, but it certainly feels like early March instead of early April. It seems like we're about a month behind. And everything is in a state of suspended animation. We don't see any hint of green in the brush or the bushes along the roadside. Sometimes you see that by this time of year. Certainly no hint of trees budding out yet, or forsythia, or any of that stuff. Maybe it'll come all of a sudden, huh? When it warms up in another week or so, that would be nice. Plenty of rain in the forecast, but that's pretty typical of April, isn't it? One other thing, it's expected to get kind of windy this afternoon. It won't be as bad as it was a couple of days ago, but going to be a little windy. We have a lot of guests who are going to be visiting with us today. So let me give you a quick rundown here. We're going to be talking about invasive pests. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, our guest will be Samantha Simon. Samantha is with the United States Department of Agriculture, and she'll be talking about invasive pests, not invasive plants, but invasive pests. So we want to talk to her about that and what we can do to help stem the tide of these invasive pests. Also, we're going to chat for a few minutes today with a very well-known educator and psychologist who deals a lot with very young kids. Her name is Angela Santomero, and we'll talk with Angela about how to inspire your youngsters, how to get them off on the right foot, even when they're in preschool. Angela, by the way, is one of the co-creators of Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, working with the Fred Rogers Company long after the death of Fred Rogers. So we'll chat with her for a short period. Also today, we're going to be talking about Tumble In Revisited with Mr. 60s, Ron Marowitz from WISR, and Chef George Roth. There's a big event coming up. It's not this weekend, it's next weekend at Tanglewood. Tumble In Revisited. Back to the golden days, the golden years, huh? And then still later on the program today, we'll chat with the local artist, John Pugliese. He's a retired educator here in the area. And I'll talk about art, and he has an art show coming up as well. Pretty accomplished painter. So all of that, a lot of guests. And we love it when we have a lot of guests on the program, so it'll be a busy Friday for us. I'll tell you what we're going to do, because we're going to get hooked up here with Samantha Simon on the telephone. She's not here in Butler. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about invasive species with Samantha Simon here on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back.
Dr. Catherine Szabo, practicing family medicine at Butler Health System.
Health really is a family matter. That's why I'm in family medicine. It's for families like Jessica's. As a working mom, she has a lot to juggle. So if something comes up, she knows I'm on top of the whole story. And if they need specialty care, I know the best is right nearby.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. We're going to talk about invasive pests, hungry pests, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. If you're just joining us, I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest chats with us by telephone. She is Samantha Simon, and she is the Senior Invasive Species Coordinator for the U.S. DA. Samantha, nice to have you with us here today.
Thank you for having me on your show, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about hungry pests.
The USDA, by the way, is the United States Department of Agriculture. Well, we've seen what hungry pests can do here in Pennsylvania. Some years ago, we had a gypsy moth infestation. We still have a bit of a problem with them, not as much as we had before. The latest we've seen is the emerald ash borer, which has pretty much wiped out all the ash trees here in Pennsylvania over the last few years. Is that a problem in other places as well, Samantha?
Oh, yes. The emerald ash borer is responsible for the destruction of over a fifth of our ash trees throughout the United States. So it really is a pest that we are trying to control to limit the spread and limit the damage that it's doing.
Well, all along highways in Pennsylvania now, we see these dead trees. Almost all of them are ash trees that have been killed by the emerald ash borer. Now, I know that you're asking, and the USDA is asking for help from the people in controlling these hungry pests. How the heck can the general population help out, Samantha?
The hungry pests are 20 invasive species that are identified by the USDA that are easily spread by people through the things that they move. So that means what people can do to help is to not move them. So these hungry pests, they like to hitchhike from place to place in our cars and trucks. They like to hide in agricultural products such as fruit, vegetables, plants. And they also like to hide in firewood and other outdoor items. So it's really important that listeners take steps to prevent their movement.
I knew about firewood. In fact, we've had restrictions a number of different times here in Pennsylvania about moving firewood in the past several years. I didn't realize they could travel on plants and seeds, too. No. Wow.
Yes, yes, they can. So, and, you know, right now, Pennsylvania is dealing with the spotted lanternfly. Now, this pest has been in Pennsylvania for the last 4 years. Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture has done a great job controlling it, but we've seen that it has spread through southeastern Pennsylvania, and we recently announced that we were giving $17.5 million to Pennsylvania for emergency funding to eradicate this pest.
What does the spotted lanternfly, does it have a particular tree that it likes to eat?
It likes to eat lots of things. So it really likes orchards. It likes grapes, you know, and it also it likes walnuts and poplar and oak trees, too. So it really does like lots of things that Pennsylvania has.
Mm. Camping season is near. Eventually it's going to warm up a little bit, we hope. But what about these hungry pests? Can they travel on camping gear and RVs and that sort of thing?
They can. They love to find places, whether to lay their eggs or to just, you know, hitchhike as adults on your RV, on your camper, on anything that you might have outside that you might be taking with you as you travel, or, you know, toys. We like to keep our toys outside and then take them with us when we go camping. So it's really important that you clean your items, both when you're going someplace that might not have the pest, and when you're returning, before you return home from a place that does have pests, it's really important to make sure that your outdoor items are clean. And that includes in removing soil from your shoes or from your tires on your vehicles.
Wow. I know that some stages of the development of ticks, and they're almost invisible. What about these hungry pests? Can you see these creatures?
So for the spotted lanternfly, you can see egg masses.
Okay.
And also, that's same with the emerald ash borer, same with the gypsy moth. You can see those egg masses. When spring comes, once they emerge and you have adult beetles, you can start to see those adult beetles. And a really great way to help identify what you're seeing is by going to hungrypests.com. We have a variety of photos and descriptions of these 20 pests on that website.
So those are the main ones that are threatening us here in Pennsylvania, the emerald ash borer and the spotted lanternfly. Are there any others?
Like you mentioned, you do still have the European gypsy moth, but for right now, those seem to be the big ones. It's really important that we want to keep it that way in Pennsylvania, that we want to keep the spotted lanternfly in southeastern Pennsylvania, and hopefully we will have that eradicated soon, and not bring other things in. So, again, it's very important that folks learn what they can do to stop the spread of hungry pests, and they can get all that information from hungrypests.com.
How do these pests spread so rapidly? Are there no natural predators? Aren't there any other things or birds or something that eat these guys?
Well, so these pests, actually, they're not native to the areas that we're talking about. So, you know, the spotted lanternfly, it is not native. It came out of Asia. So same with the emerald ash borer. So they come in because they come in through a variety of ways. Trade is a big way. You know, we like to have trade with our foreign partners. And also through travel, we like to travel. And so Oftentimes, people unknowingly bring something with them or send something back through the mail, these agricultural products in particular. So when coming back from international travel, make sure to declare all agricultural products to the U.S. Customs officers.
One final question. I know when the gypsy moths were really bad here in western Pennsylvania, it's about 10 years or so ago now, we actually did some spraying. Some people even hired helicopters to come in and spray if they had large tracts of land. Is there anything we can do to protect our trees and our gardens from these latest infestations of invasive pets?
Well, really, early detection is critical. So people can just go out into their gardens, out into their yards, and look, see what they may have. If they think they have a pest, contact their state plant health director through hungrypests.com. And, you know, if they also think they might have a bug already that's there in Pennsylvania, you can contact your tree expert or your local agricultural extension agent to discuss what's the most effective tactic for getting rid of those pests.
Well, we've really seen what damage they can do in recent years. One more time, there was a website you gave us, Samantha, where people could get more info on these guys.
Yes, please visit hungrypests.com to learn how to leave hungry pests behind.
Samantha Simon, a Senior Invasive Species Coordinator for the United States Department of Agriculture. Thanks, Samantha. Interesting info. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Very informative, very interesting there. The emerald ash borer. More to come on It's Your Turn. We have a bunch of guests today. We're going to chat for a couple of minutes, not very long, but we have a couple of minutes to chat with Angela Santomero coming up next about some advice for young parents with preschool kids. Still later, Tumble In Revisited and local artist John Pugliese. Back to talk with Angela here on It's Your Turn right after this.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
We want to talk a little bit about making sure that preschoolers get a good start educationally, and we'll do that today with a person who certainly knows this issue. Her name is Angela Santomero, and she's the author of a new book entitled Preschool Clues, Raising Smart, Inspired, and Engaged Kids in a Screen-Filled World. Angela, this is Dave Malarkey at WISR Radio, and it's a pleasure to have you on with us here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
We want to say one thing straight away, because that's going to endear you to listeners here in our area of western mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. You were involved in creating Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. You worked with the Fred Rogers Company to create this. Talk about that, because Fred Rogers is a legend here in western Pennsylvania.
Yeah, he's a legend to me, too. I was that four-year-old who could not sit any closer to the TV when he was on, and he spoke to me, directly to me. And I really believe that that's what happens when Mr. Rogers talks to you, that this is what you grow up to become. So I followed, or at least I tried to follow in his footsteps and get a master's, and I have a master's in child developmental psychology like he did, and I was so interested in the fact that he had such a vision that what he wanted to do with using this medium of television. And so when I grew up and realized that this is something that I could be doing, my first show was Blue's Clues, with that same sense of trying to really promote Fred's legacy. I really feel like that's a lot of what I wanted to do. So when I first met him, I said, I want you to know the whole reason I went to Children's Television was because of you. And he calmed me down, and he asked me my name, like, what's your name? We started over again. So unfortunately, after he died, when the company asked me, look, Fred liked your show, what would you do to promote his legacy? Would you? And I cried, as you would. And Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood was born, you know, working with the Fred Rogers company, who I call friends. And I think together we really are trying to live up to that with Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood.
Well, you could get no better testimonial than the one that comes from Joanne Rogers, the wife and the widow of the late Fred Rogers, who said this, very simply, Angela Santomero is a modern-day Fred Rogers. That must make you smile, Angela.
Yeah, it does. It makes me cry, actually.
Yeah. So as I read through your book, I have a review copy here that I've been able to quickly glance through. If I had to pick one word that's important to you in terms of working with children, it's interaction. You know, a lot of folks look at TV as a passive entertainment, and they worry about kids sitting in front of a TV doing nothing except sitting there. You believe in interaction, right?
Yeah, we've proven, I think, with research that even when they're just sitting there, they are learning and thinking and interacting in that sense, right? Not necessarily verbally or outwardly, but yes, I believe in that, in the sense that characters and themes are making kids think. I personally like it when we interact directly, either by asking specific questions like on Blue's Clues or with more of a bonding like we do with Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. I just think that for this age group from 2 to 5 especially, being able to bring them into the conversation and pausing, giving them the pace that they need to think through things, gives them a voice and empowers them and inspires them to go outside, let's say, because we talked about, you know, nature walks, and they want to go do that or paint a picture or do some dramatic play.
Let's reset for just a moment here for our listeners who may have joined us a little bit late. We're chatting on the It's Your Turn program here today on this segment of the program with Angela Santomero, author of Preschool Clues. It's an innovative parenting guide to letting go of screen time guilt and discovering what you can learn from your kids' favorite TV shows. You have a lot of practical advice in your book, Angela, that utilizes the latest research in child development. Let's talk about a couple of things. For example, if your preschooler is having trouble understanding his or her feelings, what might you suggest parents could do?
You know, we talk about play, we talk about repetition. If they're having a hard time with their feelings, Daniel Tiger is a great example of a piece of media that could help with expressing, in terms of watching Daniel express and giving parents actually little jingles or I call them little tools that they can then use so easily. They can grab them. So the idea of, like, when your child might be feeling really, really, really angry, we give them the tool of, when you feel so mad that you want to roar, take a deep breath and count to four. And so these little rhymes, these little jingles in working with our team really help to keep these messages sticky and help kids to understand. And giving them scenarios and stories and through peer modeling with an animated character also helps it to kind of sink in that sense. We want them to master these concepts and be sticky. And then I think it's getting on their level as a parent and looking them in the eye, giving them a hug, and helping them talk through the problem that they're having so that they feel safe to express their feelings. I think that's also another thing that we talk about.
So counting to four, is that what you mean by what you call the four-beat pause when you're not quite sure how to handle tough conversations with a little one?
Yeah, that's like the pausing philosophy, you know, the idea that when you are talking to a preschooler in any capacity, I mean, I think it's talking to anybody, you know, really, I see it in an adult conversation, but that you're taking a moment to pause before you jump in with an answer or another question. You know, you're just giving kids time and space to form their own opinion and then verbalize it. So, you know, in a tough situation, or even, again, when they're expressing their feelings, we don't want to tell them what they're feeling. We want them to find the words to tell us so that we don't make assumptions or we don't answer questions they're not even asking us.
There are a total of 11 clues that are presented in Angela's book, listeners, and of course they're all examined in some detail. We're kind of giving a cursory look here. One of the clues is modeling. And you say kids, even very young kids, will very quickly mimic the actions of an adult parent. And sometimes just simple things, I guess, Angela, like, I don't know, holding a door open for a stranger or something like that.
Yeah, I think that there's so much that visually we can be teaching kids by what we do, not what we say, right? And I think that's one of those things where, you know, if you're constantly, if you say hello to strangers on the street, you're smiling, you open doors, you don't have to be talking about it. You're just doing it. You're surrounding them with how you live your life and how you want. It just says so much about how you want them to grow up in this respectful way. And I think that if we say to do something and we're not doing it, you know, eat healthy and then we're eating a bag of chips, like it's a whole other thing that they're learning.
You also say sometimes this isn't easy. You need resolve. You need to keep at it, right? There are hurdles.
Oh my gosh, right? It's not, this is the hardest, being a parent is the hardest job. And I feel like if we knew that, you know, and could look ahead, I don't know how many people would do it. You know, it's so hard and it is so rewarding. And I think that what I try to talk about is how to make it easier. You know, how, when you say magic word, I call them the magic words, when you say, can you help me? How much more kids actually become cooperative and want to help. Or if you're incorporating music into your day, how calmer they can be depending on the music that you're choosing, you know, or putting on, or how they can master concepts because of the music. You know, the cleanup song does wonders, you know what I mean?
You also say to be observant is a big help. Try to look for the extraordinary, even in ordinary things that happen during the day, ordinary things that you see, and then make sure you express that to your little one.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, even going to the grocery store and then having a conversation or giving them ownership over something, all of a sudden they might notice something that you've never noticed before, right? And just really having that conversation, and that also is another chapter of respect, right? It just shows this level of respect that we have for our kids and talking to our kids the way we would talk to our friends, right, and giving them that same level of respect.
What do you think about baby talk? I've seen parents who are still using baby talk to kids who are 3, 4, 5 years old. Is that good, bad, neutral?
You know, it came from motheries, right? It came from that place of little babies needing that higher-pitched voice and that way to get them to be interacting and hearing you, and then it just kind of stuck. And I think that, no, I think as you get older, 2, 3, 4, they have the ability to take in so many new words. My 2-year-old used to talk about being a prerogative. It was her prerogative because we taught her that word because it was like, no, no, like that was her big word was no. So of course. So instead it was my prerogative, you know, and it's just there's so much that they can learn when you put it into their context and into their world, as opposed to talking more pedantic or baby talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you say if you use rich language, expressive language, sometimes you know, a little one picks that up and they feel pretty good about themselves to be able to use words like that, right? They kind of strut
That's
around
right.
a little bit, puff their chest
yep.
out, you know, show off.
That's right.
One of your clues is to enjoy, so don't make this a penance. Have fun with your young kids. Laugh, sing songs with them, right?
Well, you know, and also diffuse with humor. If we, and again, when we're stressed, it's so much harder to remember to do it, but the idea of diffusing with humor and self-deprecating humor or realizing we've made a mistake, it just breaks so much of the stress and tension and makes things so much easier and lighter, you know, in terms of thinking about it. I know that sometimes when you're 3-year-old is throwing themselves on the floor in the middle of the grocery store, you're like, oh my God, all I can do is vision my 25-year-old throwing themselves on the floor, and that's not going to happen. You know, like, it's okay. This is what we're dealing with right now, and everyone's been there. And I think social media has helped us see that, right, because people are posting not just their successes, but they're also posting their hardships and things that are hard, and we're all coming out saying, yeah, it's hard. Let's help.
Your last clue is celebrate, and your emphasis is on, just don't wait for big things. Celebrate the little things in the life of preschoolers. They'll notice this.
Yeah, little things are big to them, you know. And I think even just stopping to take a photo with your family, you know, before rushing around to go get somewhere, you know, that's celebrating in the moment. You know, it's taking a second, having a conversation around the dinner table when you have a chance to have a family dinner. That's celebrating the time that you have together. So it's, again, it's not necessarily having a big parade for your kid all the time. It's just about taking that moment, that time to bond with them.
Preschool Clues is the title of the book. Listeners, it's filled with all sorts of examples of day-to-day interactions with little ones. Preschool Clues, written by Angela Santamoro, co-creator of Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, and it's been our pleasure to chat with Angela for the past few minutes here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR. Angela, nice to meet you. Thanks for being with us today.
Nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
Sure. So long now.
Bye-bye.
Have the thoughts of becoming a caregiver for your parents been on your mind a lot lately? Maybe you're thinking about your own life in a few years. Pretty overwhelming, and you don't know where to turn. Let me suggest attorney Michael Pater. He handles each account like they were his own mom and dad. For elder law issues, wills, power of attorney, living wills, trusts, and more, call attorney Michael Pater at the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center, downtown Butler, at 287-7724. Representing individuals, families, and businesses for over 26 years is attorney Michael Pater, 287-7724.
Welcome back, good friends. Our next guests are with us here in the studio. We were talking to Angela, of course, on the telephone. Boy, we're going to have fun on the next segment. We're going to be talking about memories of Tumble In. Let me introduce our guests. First of all, Ron Marowitz is here. You know him as Mr. 60s on WISR. Ron, yeah, good to see you, as
afternoon.
Always.
Good afternoon. Good to see you.
Yeah. Also with us is Dave Martin, a man that I just met a few minutes ago, shook hands for the first time. Dave Martin, welcome. Nice to meet you.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah. And Chef George Schroth is also here. George, always good to see you as well.
Thank you, Dave. Glad to be here.
There's an event coming up at next Saturday, right,
next
Ron?
Next Saturday, April 14th.
Yeah. Memories of the Tumble In. Now, I did not grow up in Butler. But even though I didn't, I know a little bit about the Tumble In because when I moved here, that's all anybody of my contemporaries were talking about. Boy, well, you missed the Tumble In, kid.
Well, you know, this has been a process. I first heard of the Tumble In through a cousin who turned me on to a couple of Facebook pages, and one of them was Memories of the Tumble In.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how I found Dave. And we started to talk, and he telling me stories about when he DJ'd the Tumble In. And it's just grown in leaps and bounds over the last couple of months.
So you're going to have an evening with dinner by Chef George?
Absolutely.
And then dancing to the music?
Oh, yeah.
That you would have heard back in the Tumble In days.
Absolutely. Huh? And here's the beautiful part. Dave is playing his 45s. He probably has one of the largest collections of 45 RPMs. And, you know, today you show a 45 to a kid, and he has no clue what it is.
Yeah, I think it's a UFO or something, a flying saucer. Dave Martin was one of the DJs for Tumble In. How in the heck did you ever get started doing that, Dave Martin?
Believe it or not, a friend of mine asked me if I'd fill in for him, and I filled in for him and ended up taking it over, and I ran it until the end of it. They closed the Y and moved to the new location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was held at it's now the Cubs Hall, but that originally it's the old YMCA
right in
Butler. So you stepped in kind of as a pinch hitter. It's like when it was it Luke Gehrig or somebody that started as a pinch hitter for the Yankees when some guy got sick and they couldn't get him out of there. I think it was him. when did you take over and start doing this? Do you remember when that was?
1964, in the fall.
1964. Hmm. Were you still in school then?
I was in high school, yes.
So this was kind of like a part-time job, but it morphed into, gosh, almost a career for you, right?
Well, up until the 80s, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know what's funny? Is you know who started, or not maybe the person that started it, but one of the first DJs for the Tumble Inn back in the 50s was Guy Travaglio.
Oh, my good friend Guy Travaglio.
Yeah. So it has quite a history.
So started in the 50s, was big in the 60s, and from what I understand, again, I wasn't here, but I guess they packed the place for these.
We used to get 1,000 people in there. That's hard to believe. It was just wall to wall.
Was it always on the same night, Dave Martin?
Every Friday night.
Every Friday. Come heck or high water.
Heck or high water.
It's a place to be. So was it in the gym area? I guess in the gym area.
It was in the gymnasium, right. Mm-hmm.
Well, that was what you did back in that era, whether it was at the junior high sock hop or the senior prom. You danced in the gym.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. You had to be careful you didn't scuff the floor, though.
Exactly.
They always had people there, proctor or principal, saying, don't scuff the floor. We got to play basketball on this floor.
You know, there was a method that seemed, you know, Dave and I have been talking about, and there was a method to their madness. Now, what was it, the girls or the guys who used to walk around the gym?
The guys walked around counterclockwise.
That's very important.
Wait a minute. This is a story I haven't heard before. They walked around.
They walked around for some reason.
Were they scoping things out or
apparently.
Something?
Apparently. But they did. They walked around counterclockwise, and it was kind of funny. Put a slow song on, and pretty soon the dance floor would be full. Girls usually danced with each other mm-hmm. when the fast dances were on.
So, but the slow songs, that was when things really started to heat up a little bit, I guess.
Things heated up.
I'm trying to remember from record hops when I was a kid. They always had a cakewalk or something somewhere at the end where you'd walk around in a circle, and I forget how they did it. Somebody dropped a stick or something. Whoever it hit on the head got the cake.
I remember when I went to high school dances and junior high dances. You know, the whole thing was with guys. It was they were always afraid of rejection. So a buddy of mine once said, he says, here's what you do. You go up to the prettiest girl in the gym and ask her to dance. Well, I don't want to do that. She'll say no. No, because all the guys are afraid to ask her, so nobody asks her to dance. And that was pretty successful.
It was a successful strategy for you.
Oh, huh? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, let me talk a little bit about the particulars of this evening. Again, it's a week from tomorrow.
Right.
So Saturday, the 14th, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
14th. And there'll be a dinner first, Chef George preparing the dinner.
Yes, we're going to have boneless stuffed chicken breast and carved ham with a sweet sauce, cheesy potatoes, green beans, and like I said, a surprise dessert. I haven't decided on that yet.
You better dance after that to burn off all those calories. That sounds delicious.
You know, I just have to add that if you've never been to the Tanglewood Entertainment Center and have never had one of Chef George's incredible meals, get on the telephone and buy a ticket, because I got to tell you, you will not leave there hungry, and you will be so satisfied that it's crazy. I mean, this man is a genius in the kitchen.
This will be a BYOB event,
BYOB,
right?
As always. Mm-hmm.
Because most of the people who were dancing in the 60s are now of legal age to consume the beverage of their choice.
Might be Geritol, but
might be some kind of tonic, yes. Do you have a playlist, Dave Martin, or are you going to play songs from a particular era? Or
yeah, we are playing stuff from the 60s, and believe it or not, we have the mirror ball that everybody asks if it's going to be down there.
Get out. Got the mirror ball, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an important, you know, bit of memorabilia, I guess. You know, the mirror ball from the Tumble Inn.
I don't know whether I'd want to go back to being that age or not. I'm not sure.
Oh, I'd go back to that age if I knew what I knew now.
I guess that's true, but there was a lot of teenage angst going on back in those days.
Yeah, well, that's
I can only speak from a guy's perspective. I don't know. Maybe from a girl's perspective, too.
You know, we're going to have a ball because what we've kind of worked it into is almost like dueling DJs. Because I will play the more mainstream rock and roll hits of the 50s and 60s, and mm-hmm. maybe going into the 70s a little bit. And Dave is going to play a lot of the, I'm going to call them regional hits that, you know, you could only buy right now on 45s if you could find them, and Dave's got them. A few things are on CDs now, which I have acquired, but... we're going to do that, and then we've got some... Oh, George came up with this idea, which was absolutely perfect. We're doing a thing in between our going back and forth playing some really good rock and roll music. We're going to have some tribute artists. Now, we got a guy... We let the cat out of the bag on my show last week. We have a guy that does Jerry Lee Lewis better than Jerry Lee Lewis. If I got to tell you, this guy, he walks onto the stage like Jerry Lee Lewis. Hmm. He's absolutely incredible. And then we have a gal that does Patsy Cline. And it's one of those things where if you closed your eyes, you'd swear you were listening to Patsy Cline. So we're going to do that. And then, of course, we've got 50-50 drawings, and we've got a trivia contest that's going to be during the show. Off and on during the show.
Music of the era, I suppose, right?
Oh, of course.
You know?
Of course. Yeah. And we've got some great prizes for people who know their rock and roll trivia. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I know I can't wait.
You can get a lot of people in there, but there is a limit eventually, right?
No, we're limited to 300 people and keep a dance floor.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the door prizes I've gotten from people here in town, the story was after the dances were over back in the day, they all went to the pizza shops in town. So I went around to all our pizza shops in town and got gift certificates, over $200 in gift certificates for pizza from places like Burger Hut, Natilli's Pizza, Penn Street Pizza, Villa Grande, Pizza Hut, Taney's Pizza, Mickey's Pizza, Papa John's, and more.
Got them all.
So there's too many to give away at halftime, so we got to come up with a trivia to give some more away.
Going to be a fun night.
Oh, absolutely.
Going to be a fun night.
Absolutely.
Can you get tickets in advance? That's probably recommended if you have
Yes, you got to get tickets in advance. They're on sale at Tanglewood. Just stop in and see Charlie. Call down. Use a credit card if you want to. And come early to get your seats.
This all takes place at Tanglewood Center. I'm kind of assuming that everybody knows where that is, but there might be listeners who don't. It's just off Hanson Avenue in Butler, I guess technically in Lindora.
We're trying to... Tanglewood is proud of what we've been doing. We're doing a lot of things now. You just have to pay attention. There's always something for everyone. We have a purse bash coming up in May. The ladies are going to crowd in there for high-end purses, and there's going to be a brunch that goes with it. You know, we do all kind. We got more entertainment... Beyond these fellas, we've brought in such people as impersonator Johnny Cash. We've brought in Sonny and Cher. And we do all kinds of things for the community as well. We do fundraisers for Alzheimer's. We did fundraisers for kids, for Backpack for Kids. We've done two fundraisers for the canine dogs in Butler over the past couple of years. So Tanglewood is very involved in the community, and we want people to know that and come down and see us.
So tell me, DJ Dave Martin, what would be an example of a song that was a regional hit, or at least started out as a regional hit here in Western Pennsylvania?
I'd say probably "Love You So Bad" by the Empires. It was a local hit only. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that one.
Oh, you know, I didn't either. So I sat there at the computer and I found it, and I own it now on CD.
That's a good thing.
I was thinking of something like 5 o'clock World by the Vogues, because they're from Turtle
They were a
Creek,
local
right?
group, right.
Yeah. Yeah. But that, of course, became a national hit eventually. Yeah. And they had a couple of more whoppers, too. Turn Around, Look at Me.
Oh, yeah, they had a lot of hits.
5 o'clock World, I thought, was always the best one, though.
Yeah, but there's an awful lot of groups, too, from Philadelphia.
became popular here in Western Pennsylvania as well. What's that group we talked about? Billy and the Essentials.
Billy and the Essentials.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I'm just, again, this has been so much fun, this whole process, and to see it come together. And what we're hoping that if the crowd is good and the crowd is happy with us, and I'm sure they will be, that we do more of these. Mm-hmm. Now, we're not going to do it every Friday night like the original Tumble In, but we're already planning for the next one, which this is just Memories of the Tumble In, you know, featuring the two of us. But I think the next one we're talking about is just going to be called Tumble In, Doo-Wop Forever. And you'll never guess who's going to be our special guest star.
Doo-Wop Forever.
Who? Bill Reichert.
Oh, really?
From the Doo-Wop Shop, yes.
Oh, wow, yes, yes. Well, the 60s, listen to me talking to two DJs here from the 60s. It was a time of great change in music, you know. We went... If you go back to the 50s, pop music was Perry Como, Frank Sinatra, even some of the lounge singers.
Mm-hmm.
And then Elvis came along, and we kind of went from rockabilly. Actually, Elvis started out with a lot of rockabilly stuff.
Right, on Sun label.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then to rock and roll. And then before you know it, these people started coming over from England. We had the British invasion, so... I mean, just in the span of 10 years or so, the tremendous change in popular music in America.
Yeah, quite a bit of the rock and the early rock and roll, which, by the way, is what my show is about tomorrow.
Ron's show, by the way, is Saturday mornings here on WISR.
From 9 to 10.
Mr. 60s from 9 to 10. Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt.
little shameless plug, you know. This.
You're talking about the British invasion tomorrow?
Yeah, well, no, we're talking about the early rock and rollers. Uh-huh. And quite a few of them were really country artists that crossed over, and they were singing what they called rockabilly, mm-hmm. which is nothing more than a cross between rock and roll and country. And that's rockabilly.
Rock around the clock.
Yeah, rock around the clock. Actually, that was considered one of the first rock and roll records.
Bill Haley and the Comets.
Mm-hmm.
They were a tremendous influence on the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
There are numerous interviews where the Beatles would refer to Bill Haley and the Comets and Buddy Holly and the Crickets.
Buddy Holly, Little Richard, Chuck Berry.
In fact, the Beatles, their name partially comes from that. The Crickets, and then they decided to go
exactly
with the Beatles.
Right. And they took the Crickets, Beatles, just changed the words.
Spelled
and
it differently, of course. Yeah. It's B-E-A instead of B-E-E. But Crickets, Beatles. Yeah. Kind of like Chubby Checker got his name.
Yeah, yeah.
From that's not his real name.
Yeah.
Chubby Checker. But Fats Domino was a big star at the time.
Do you know his real name?
Which one?
Chubby Checker?
No.
Ernest Evans.
But it was a play on, you know, Fats Domino, mm-hmm. Chubby Checker. Dominoes, checkers.
Right. He was given that name by Dick Clark's wife.
Dick Clark. By the way, you mentioned Philadelphia earlier and how that was big and regional. Bandstand started in Philadelphia, didn't it? Before it went national.
American Bandstand.
Yeah. It was a Philadelphia show.
Exactly.
There were local TV shows too. That Clark Grace, who was a DJ in Pittsburgh, had a TV show for a while.
There was so many. I mean, groups and singers that came out of Philadelphia, and that was kind of like the rule of thumb. If you made it on the Dick Clark show, you were made.
Well, Pittsburgh was pretty big too. I mean, you know, in terms of doo-wop singers
mm-hmm.
from Pittsburgh,
you got the Marcells,
Skyliners, mm-hmm.
Skyliners, yeah.
And the Marcells probably the two most famous ones.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, the lead singer for the Skyliners just died here.
Yeah,
Jimmy Beaumont.
Jimmy Beaumont, he was absolutely terrific.
Beaumont, yeah,
what a singer.
Yeah.
But there's a guy named John Sarkis, who's a friend, who's an incredible singer, took over the lead position in the Skyliners and now tore around. The funny thing about the Skyliners is that none of the people in the Skyliners right now are the original members. And but they're still, I got to tell you, they are awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Will this music ever die, Dave Martin, the music of the 60s?
You know what? Even the younger kids are starting to listen to it, which is, I think, a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the all-girl groups from the 60s. We've never seen the likes of that since, but there were many of them, you know. The Dixie Cups, the Ronettes.
The Chiffons.
The Chiffons.
The Shirelles.
The Orlons.
Keep going all afternoon. Yeah. That's a whole interesting story, you know, with a lot of these girl groups were kind of like studio singers. And they would record a record, and then they would put together the right girls to go out on tour. That was quite common. A lot of stuff that Phil Spector recorded and produced and recorded.
For all of his character flaws.
yeah, you think?
Nonetheless, a heck of a producer.
Yeah.
Some of that stuff still sounds pretty good today. Chiffons, the Ronettes, you know?
Mm-hmm. I listen to that stuff all the time. Never stop.
Yeah. So will you be playing any of that stuff on
Saturday
the 14th?
Yeah. We're going to be playing our fair share of doo-wop. We're going to have girl groups. We're going to have Motown. A lot of Motown fans out there. And again, some of the regional singing groups and stuff. And I did a thing, what was it, last year at the Tanglewood, and we did a dinner dance and had a lot of requests. And the funny thing is that they still want to hear all these old hit records. And at that particular time, I didn't know what they were, you know, until, of course, I met Dave Martin, and he enlightened me. And now I'm a lot more familiar with all these old records that, you know, were on 45s back in the day.
Did you, whenever you were DJing Tumble In, Dave Martin, did you play what you had in mind, or did you take requests from the kids who were there, or a little bit of both, or what?
Probably more or less a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. I played a lot of the stuff that was kind of off the wall, that I wouldn't play anything if you couldn't dance to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they go to a dance to dance.
I forgot about that.
But a lot of people.
Nice words, but you can't dance to.
A lot of people would ask for songs that, you know, they're good to listen to, really like nice songs, but you couldn't use them in a dance. So I tried to play only stuff you can dance to. Some people would get mad, but people liked it in the end, I think.
Well, that's something you could do. You ought to have a dance contest. Some of those dances back in those days. See who can do the mashed potato.
There you go.
It has a totally different meaning today than it did way back then.
Well, you know,
or the jerk. It was another song.
Or the jerk, yeah, the monkey. Yeah.
The monkey.
Yeah.
I don't remember that one. The Freddy.
The Freddy. Yeah. That's fun to do, actually.
That Freddy and the Dreamers, right?
Freddy and the Dreamers,
yeah. I'm telling you now.
Part of the British invasion.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm telling you now.
Yeah. No, it's what I've found too is you got to play a few fast songs so that the people that, you know, still have all their agility can dance. But you got to play a lot of slow stuff. You got to play a lot of ballads, and because you can fill the dance floor. I mean, I don't know how many times when I've been to the Tanglewood that when you're playing slow songs, the dance floor is packed. So we're going to have to keep that in mind, too, which, of course, we will.
Problem with a lot of baby boomers is, even if they remember how to do the mashed potato, they're not able to anymore.
That is a fact.
Or if they did the jerk, it would be the last dance they ever did, you know.
I had one lady that wanted to know if we made arrangements to have an area at the Tanglewood for walker parking.
There's a commercial on TV. It's for some drug. I don't know what it is. But there's a grandfather playing hopscotch with his granddaughter. And he hops, you know, whatever he does. He goes up and sits down on the steps with his wife, and he says, "Well, I still got it." And she says, "Remember the last time we went dancing?" And he gives her, you know, so they have a film clip, he gives her a dip, and he goes, "Up, don't have it, don't have it." It's funny. Yeah. Well, who cares whether you have it or not? Get out there and dance, right, well, Dave?
That's exactly it. Right. We're going to give it a shot, see what happens next Saturday.
Did they have it? Because, again, I didn't live here then. Did they have a ladies' choice at the Tumble Inn?
We did have a ladies' choice, yes. Mm-hmm. And turned out pretty good.
Yeah. Did that go toward the end of the evening, or did you have a couple of those? Or?
We did a couple in the evening, yeah.
Let the ladies do the asking for a change, huh?
And you got to close every... I mean, I don't want to rush past the show. You haven't even started it yet. But what's the favorite song to close the show?
Good night, sweetheart. Good night. I closed thousands of dances with that song.
That was always the last one you played,
yes.
Huh?
Yes. We usually played The Dance Is Over, Billy and the Essentials, and then The Spaniels, The Dance Is Over. Good night, sweetheart. Good night.
So you still have the 45s that you were playing way back in the 60s, Dave?
Yes, and I still play them quite often.
Are they a little scratchy now? I hope so, because that gives them that real authentic sound, you know.
They don't sound like a CD. You have that shh.
The hardest problem today is finding a turntable, you know, just a simple turntable. Or did you have a pretty complex one? I don't know.
I just bought two new Stantons. They still make them.
Really?
Yeah, they're making almost every song comes out now. It comes out on vinyl also.
Well, you're certainly a person to ask about this. I've read Wire stories about that. I can't figure it myself. The convenience of having your music either on a CD or on an MP3 when you can have it instantly, as opposed to going and getting the record out of the album, putting it on, trying to find the little gap between the song that you want to listen to.
It's the anticipation.
You can do it in a second if you've got it on a CD.
I call it the Dave Martin sound. That's the sound you hear when you first put that needle on the vinyl record. I mean, it's just like it's the anticipation of the song coming on.
Do you really think it sounds better, Dave?
Well, me, I myself, I like it. I like the sound of vinyl.
That's when they get to the end of the record and, you know, you've fallen asleep or something. It just keeps going on and on and on. Yeah.
That's a good... I like that.
Memories of the Tumble Inn coming up next Saturday. Not tomorrow, but next Saturday. And everybody's welcome here, right? Yeah. Come on in. Mm-hmm. Have a good meal. What time's it all? What time's the dinner, George?
Doors open at 6, dinner's at 7, show starts at 8.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have an hour to eat.
Yeah.
And you better be dancing after that meal, I want to tell you.
Oh, yeah, you got to dance that food off.
How much are the tickets, George?
$25 a person.
And you get them in advance?
Yes, you can.
And probably a good idea to do it that way, too, right. With all the publicity that we've had about this. It's going to be a good time.
Oh, I think so. I think so. I think we hit upon a format that I think is actually genius, is to mix it with some live entertainment. That'll keep everybody happy, you know. I hate to say this as a DJ, but, you know, people sometimes towards the end of an evening get tired of hearing records. So if you mix it up and you have some live performers in there, I think it makes it more exciting. Because after they finish, then you want to dance. So I think it's going to be a great show.
Do you expect there will be some people come in typical 60s garb?
That's a good question. We're going to find out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to be in typical 60s garb. I'm always in typical 60s garb.
Well, you know, depending on what era, because as I mentioned earlier, there was a big change during the 60s from the beginning of the 60s to the end. But, you know, there were certain almost regulatory uniforms that people wore to dances back in those days.
Well, you know, I grew up in the music business, and when people were out there dancing, I was working with my band. And so it was from a little different perspective. You know, I could see the people, what they were wearing with their bell-bottom jeans and stuff like that. And here I was up on the bandstand wearing like one of those Beatles Edwardian-type jackets and stuff. So sometimes as musicians, we take it a little bit too extreme. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, again, you know, for some baby boomers, most of the jeans that we wear now are not bell-bottom, they're bell-top. You know?
Yeah, well, that's very true. But
they fit a little better that way.
What I do, because I loved bell-bottoms, and of course it's tough to find them, I take my jeans, I cut a slit up the side seam,
and I fray the bottom so they kind of hang over the front of the shoe, and they look more like bell bottoms. Unfortunately, that hasn't caught on.
Well, who knows? Fashion comes
it'll
and goes.
It'll start a trend. You know. I don't know.
Well, it sounds like a good night. Dave, do you still live in Butler?
Oil City.
Oh, yes. Hard by the Upper Allegheny, huh?
By the Upper Allegheny.
Yeah, pretty territory up there. People have told me that I have to go up and there's a hiking and biking trail up there.
Yes, it runs.
It's supposed to be just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I think you'd enjoy it up there. It's really nice.
So I should get my bike and go up there this summer, huh?
That's a good place to go.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to meet you. You're a legend around here for baby boomers, that's for sure. Nice to have you. It'd be nice to see you next Saturday, too.
Well, thank you.
There are people that actually have posted in the Memories of the Tumble In Facebook page. We'll come as long as Dave Martin's there.
Oh, he's going to be there.
So it's kind of like, what am I, chop liver? You know.
Well, Ron Marowitz will be there, too. And by the way, you can hear him tomorrow morning at 9 here on WRSR. Tumble In. Back in my softball playing days, we used to play a team from, I forget where they were from. It was the Dewdrop Inn. D-E-W-D-R-O-P. The Dewdrop Inn. The Dewdrop Inn, the Tumble Inn.
Mm-hmm.
The Crickets, the Beatles, you know.
It's what goes around comes around. This is hopefully the start of something big.
Doors open at 6, you said, George?
Yes, doors open at 6. Dinner's at 7. Entertainment starts at 8 o'clock. And since I started this live entertainment, we always sell out.
Really?
So get your tickets.
Okay.
Yeah, 300 seats.
It's next Saturday night. What else is coming up in the near future at Tanglewood, George?
Well, June the 9th, we're going to have the, again, back to doo-wop, we're going to have the big Pittsburgh doo-wop band, again with our friend as one of the vocalists out front, and also an accompanying vocalist as well. Purse Bash is coming up in May, on May the 19th. That's our first ever Purse Bash, and I think the ladies are buying the tickets up as we speak. And there is a brunch associated with that. We're going to feed the ladies when they come in and let them go down into the rooms. We're going to have 50-50 drawings. We're going to award a new upscale purse every 10 minutes. And there'll be basket raffles as well, 50-50. It's going to be a good time. It's our first one. We're going to see how it goes.
And coming up at Memories of the Tumble Inn, spinning the records will be Dave Martin and Ron Marowitz. It'll be a good time next Saturday. Thanks, guys. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Dave, you've jogged a lot of memories here, I think.
That's a good thing, I hope.
Sharing information with us here today. Stick around. We're going to take a break. Coming up, we're going to be talking to a local artist. Some of you may know him. He was a former teacher in the Butler Area School District, art teacher. Great painter. John Napugliese will join us next on the program. So stick around. More to come here on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back. 80 years. Hunter Truck Sales celebrating 80 years as a leader in the trucking industry. With 20 locations, they've grown to be the largest heavy truck provider in the Northeast, a company built on Homer Hunter's family values and goals. Hunter Truck Sales has forged trusting customer relationships that continue to steer them toward long-term success. Hunter Truck Sales, proudly providing solutions for all of your trucking needs. Check out huntertrucksales.com for truck inventory, careers, and locations. Congratulations to Hunter Truck Sales on 80 years. Family-driven, road-tested since 1938. For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 South of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
Our hands and wrists are in motion nearly every minute of every day. So when you develop pain, everyday tasks become a problem. And although the causes of pain may vary, the orthopedic hand and upper extremity surgeons at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers diagnose and treat a wide array of conditions. To learn more about hand and upper extremity care, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
Welcome back, friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program on a Friday. Nice to be Friday as well, isn't it? That's for sure. Well, our guest on the next segment is an acquaintance of mine of some years. He's now a retired teacher in the Butler Area School District, local artist John Pugliese. John, good to see you. You and I haven't shaken hands for a while. Good to see you.
No, we haven't. Thanks for having me here, Dave.
In fact, I didn't even realize that you had retired.
Yes, I have. It's the first year out, and it's been an experience so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You were an art teacher mainly in the secondary schools, I believe, right?
That's correct. For 20-plus years, most of them were at the high school. I think the first two were at the junior high. And I have to say, what a wonderful career, honestly. What an inspiration given to those kids, and what I've learned, as well as being a teacher, what I've learned, I think, was more important. So it was a great career.
Did you get much chance to create art yourself, or was it? You're pretty busy when you got a teaching load, right?
Yeah, it can be exhausting. But I'm one of those guys that really have dedicated myself personally to just an arts career. So yeah, I was one of the few teachers. Even my colleagues said, "Well, you're the only guy I know that goes home to paint."
Mm-hmm.
And it's just in me. It's always been in me since I was a little kid.
I know. I watched you create paintings for several years during the Fine Arts and Beyond Showcase, which, by the way, is coming up tomorrow evening.
That's right. Yeah, they're setting it up tonight, and I don't think I missed that.
Well, you were a demonstrating artist, I don't know how many years, most
yes.
of the years I think that I was involved with
yeah.
it. And I don't know, that takes... a little bit of bravery to start out with a blank canvas, and you got hundreds of people watching you,
yeah.
and you create because, and I've had some good art teachers over the years who said that's a whole different ball game, you know. Because when you're creating a painting, there are various stages that it goes through when it doesn't look very good, and that's because. That's the way you create a painting. You don't snap your fingers and it's a finished product.
Absolutely, Dave. You're so right there. And with people standing behind you watching, you know, it's a little bit nerve-wracking. But usually, and that's why I choose to work with acrylics, any errors that I do I can quickly cover up because acrylics dry so quickly as opposed to working with oils. If you work too rapidly, you can make mud really quickly.
I know when I first got involved in painting, I was in high school, actually, thanks to a tremendous teacher, and you uh-huh. know how the effect that you can have on students' lives.
Absolutely. Yep.
I had a teacher, I expressed an interest in oil painting, and this is a true story. He said, come see me after class, and he gave me about 8 or 10 tubes of, get this, Grumbacher.
Grumbacher, one of the best
colors.
Lines.
Yeah. This was, you know, he didn't give me the cheap stuff. And a few brushes and a couple of cardboard canvases, and he said, here, go paint.
Do it.
And I'll never forget that.
Yeah, well, a good teacher, I think, sometimes is there for direction. The student brings the inspiration or has a direction they want to go, and that teacher then goes ahead and says, oh, tweak this here, move this here, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and that was one of the things as a teacher that I provided my students with was the opportunity to develop in themselves. So, and how that relates to me now currently is my work has shifted and changed and progressed. I paint nothing like what I used to paint like. And to me, if you're not pushing the boundary of what you will do and who you are as an artist, you become stagnant and everything looks the same. Yeah, I took that even further, if I might, Dave. One year, I was so bored with my paintings. I was pleased, nice end product, but I decided to not paint with a brush for a whole summer. And boy, did that change what I did. It just took me whole different directions that I couldn't have imagined.
Did you use a knife, a palette knife?
I used, I had remodeled a house, and ironically, I used my spackling drywall palette. It's like a 3-inch, you know, spatula. Mm-hmm. And I used my hands, and then I used brayers and dots, and I used everything, and it has, and it's showing up now in what I'm doing with the dots there.
Well, I'll speak for a minute while I reach around and grab that, because John brought in one of his paintings that he's been working on. Set it up on that chair so I can see it there now. That is very, very fascinating. First of all, pretty big. What is that, like 2 feet by 3 feet or something like that?
Dave, that's actually small.
Oh, you generally work bigger?
I do. And what I'm doing is coming back down to size because of the upcoming show that I'm doing. But I actually, the biggest one I did was 4 feet by 8 feet. Uh-huh. And it hangs in a friend's dining room. And it is just, like, I can't believe that I have created it. You know.
By the way, in case there are some people that have to leave us before we finish, you do have an upcoming show in a couple of months?
Yes, I do. I'm doing my first show. I'm excited. It's my first one-man show, and it is coming up June 9th. You know, actually, the show will be at the Downtown Gallery, the Butler Artists Association, and I will set it up Wednesday. So Thursday and Friday it'll be open, as well as Saturday, and the reception will be Saturday evening. Mm-hmm. So come on down, take a peek, give me some love.
So tell me a little bit about this painting that you brought in with you today.
Well, I decided not to recreate the wheel. I've grown up in the Catholic Church, and so pageantry and drapery and so on. And so, of course, as an art teacher, tying into that, you know, I studied the Michelangelo, the Sistine Chapel a lot. And so this particular piece is the Delphic Sibyl, who is an oracle. All the Sibyls in the Sistine Chapel are oracles. And so that's why she has dots that cover her eyes. So, you know, judgment, and so that divine inspiration is not to be tainted by visual, and so that's why the gold dots cover her eyes, so she can't see, so she's seeing from within and beyond into the ethereal realm.
And the dots proceed from there at random throughout the portrait. This is a head.
Yeah, it's a portrait.
Torso portrait,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And another trick that I did with her, I wasn't pleased when I put her in, And this has happened a couple of times. And so what I do is I scrub paint off. I scrape it. So it has that older, kind of scratchy kind of look.
Yeah,
almost like the fresco. And so by scraping it off, it gives it that antiqued, older look. And I've done I've actually done landscapes where I was disappointed. And so I just throw them in the shower and scrub them down with a vegetable scrubber. Mm. And just knowing when to stop is the trick.
If you would get close to some of the masterpieces in Italy from antiquity, for example, The Last Supper by Leonardo da Vinci.
Right.
That's a fresco, I believe.
Yes, it is. That's correct.
Now, you know, most people say, well, I thought it was a mural. Isn't it on the wall of a church? It is. But a mural is painted on a wall. A fresco is actually part of the plaster, right?
That is correct. And I've tried that, and it is not easy.
Well, Leonardo had a special talent.
Yeah. So I'll let those guys do it. One of the other pieces that I did was The Ecstasy of St. Teresa, which is from a Bernini sculpture, which mm-hmm. is also in Rome. And it's just a magnificent piece where St. Teresa is being pierced. There's an angel standing above her. And the way that her head is tilted back, and so what I've done is I've taken the liberty of, you know, changing the color or putting color to what is a traditional sculpture, and quite beautiful, quite inspirational is what I'm seeing in these pieces. It's the inspiration. And as an artist, that inspiration has to be transferred from me to you. So I hope that the viewer, when they look at my work, gets that wow, like almost to the point where they don't want to say anything. That's the greatest compliment.
I'm anxious to see that. I'm familiar with the Bernini's statue. Ah. It's white.
Yes, pure marble.
So
gorgeous.
You're putting color into it.
Yes. Right? And I mostly sort of worked with the shadows. You know, it's such a dramatic piece. And so in her eye socket, the eye cavity, is aqua blue. And I did some scrub off, so it looks like marble with color, and then I put the dots. Again, the dots come, and if I might go back, the dots actually came from inspiration by the Impressionists, because I started out as an Impressionist landscape painter. And it's that progression for me, because I'll have some of my early works there, too. There'll be about 40 pieces in the show. And it's the first time I'm putting myself on the line, so I'm excited, I'm nervous, it's good energy. But the Impressionists, if you look at their paintings, they're color beside color beside color, dot to dot. And so by simplifying that and studying the masters, Van Gogh and Cassatt and all those guys, Monet in particular, those dots, if you separate them, then you start seeing color differently. And so what I've done is I've taken sort of a modern twist on a traditional style, which I feel like I'm not mastered, but I'm pretty good at it, you know. And so, and again, shifting from Impressionism to this, you know, to the rollers, which made dots, to now actually using circle dots. It's come a long way.
We're talking for listeners, excuse me, listeners who may have joined us a little bit late. We're talking with local artist John Puglisi. He was formerly an art teacher in the Butler Area School District. He's retired now, and he's devoting his full time and I'm sure you can hear it in his voice, his passion to creating art. And he's coming up in early June with a one-man show, June 9th, I think you said.
June 9th, correct.
So you get an opportunity to see his work and talk to him, because he'll be there for the reception, I'm sure.
Right. Yes.
Take a quick break. I want to talk more about art and about John's work here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back. One of our sponsors on the program today, Miller Shoes. Miller Shoes, downtown Butler, 215 South Main Street. Staying power, folks. You know, a lot of companies talk about tradition. They would be hard-pressed to match Miller's Shoes. 125 years. Yeah, yeah. Pretty terrific. And they've got a tremendous selection of name-brand shoes. These are shoes that, you know, they're going to last more than a couple of months. They've got names like Timberland, waterproof boots. Rockport is a great shoe. If you're talking about athletic shoes, they have all the famous brands there at Miller's. Nike and New Balance and Saucony and Rockport and Keds and Skechers and Easy Spirit and Pro-Pet and more. You don't have to go to three or four different stores. They got them all right there. By the way, there are always lots of ladies' shoes and men's shoes, too, displayed on racks on sale for easy browsing. And Miller's is also your headquarters for SAS Comfort Shoes, America's favorite comfort shoes, SAS, made in the U.S., by the way. And they also make sandals. A lot of folks don't realize that. They're familiar with SAS shoes. They know how comfortable they are. They make sandals, too. So you might want to look at a pair or two of those for the upcoming warm weather season. And you can always get that famous Miller's fit. They're wonderful prices and a big smile, too, from the Ciprians at Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Miller's Shoes. We'll be right back.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 0101. Pick three is 309309. Pick four, 4225. The pick five, 76354. A wild ball for each of those is 9. And the treasure hunt is 7, 15, 20, 25, and 27. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $27,000.
I know your pet is much more than just a pet. Your pet is truly a member of your family, one of you.
So when the time comes, when it's time to say goodbye, your pet, that family member, deserves respectful care. If you choose pet cremation, which so many have, consider the impeccable, sensitive, local service that's provided by Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller. We'll make this pledge. Your pet will be cremated individually in our impeccable facility here in Butler. We assure you that the cremains are assuredly your pets and your pets alone. Before you make your decision, ask how others do it. Individual cremation? Maybe not. Bring your pet to us or we'll come to your home. So when the time comes, tell your veterinarian that you prefer Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller. He's a pet parent too. Call us, 724-287-3707, 287-3707, Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller. Thank you.
Dr. Jason Clark is an orthopedic surgeon for Butler Health System. He also volunteers as a high school team doctor.
We all hold our breath a little bit when our kids compete, because we know there's always the chance of an injury. For Eric and Sydney, that was a severely injured ankle. Fortunately, I have quick access to the tools and the people they need, giving them the best opportunity to get back out there.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care, but more importantly, we know why we have to.
Welcome back, good friends. We're having a nice conversation with local artist John Pugliese, retired art teacher here in the Butler School District. He's preparing a one-man show that's going to open in early June, June 9th, at the Art Center. By the way, the Art Center is a gem that a lot of people don't realize in downtown Butler. It's on South Main Street, John. It's right across from the post office, and it's a wonderful place to stop in and look at art.
Absolutely.
Or make art, for that matter.
And make art. They really are doing a great job. In fact, anybody of any painting level, especially if you're into portraiture, every Wednesday, I forget the hours, I think 9 to 12 maybe, 10 to 12 is a portraiture class. It's free. You just show up, bring some stuff, sit down. And then also right after that, from 1 to 3, is just a painting group. They get together and support each other, critique each other. And so I encourage anybody of any level, come on down, you know, spend a couple hours. They have easels. They have all kind of stuff. Just bring your canvas and whatever you're working on. Or if you need inspiration, come on down. We'll find some for you. And that's what's nice about it. This is a free thing for us. And I think people have a tendency to forget, you know, that there's stuff happening in town, especially in that art center. Mm-hmm. They've gotten new kilns, so there's a wonderful clay program coming in, and they're just really pushing to encourage people, you know, to stay here. You don't need to go to Pittsburgh. You don't need to go to Cranberry. You know, we have something great here, and it's time to utilize it. So if you have an hour or two, go on down. You know?
And their big spring show is coming up very soon, too. Opens at the end of this month. That'll
right.
be before your show, of course.
Right.
By the way, while we're talking about this, tomorrow evening is the Fine Arts and Beyond Showcase. It showcases tremendous artwork by students in the Butler Area School District, and also showcases the talents of music students as well, singers and instrumentalists. And it all takes place at the Intermediate High School building. There's no admission. They do have gift baskets and silent auctions and stuff because they're raising money for the Golden Tornado Scholastic Foundation. But wonderful opportunity to see some pretty amazing work by young artists. I'm sometimes astonished at not just the talent, but the creativity of some of these young kids. And the same with the music. So that's tomorrow evening if you're so inclined. You don't have to have a student in the Butler Schools or live in the Butler School District. It's open to anyone to attend. So you said you started out, or you used to paint nothing but landscapes. Do you do that at all anymore, or is it all portrait work now?
You know, I did. I started out with landscape painting. You know, my high school art teacher, way back in from Elderton, PA, in the early 70s. Wow. she was like, paint what you know. If you've never seen the ocean, you can't experience what the sound, the smell, the fragrances. And she said, so paint what you know. And ironically, I live on the edge of Alameda Park here in Butler, and my backyard is the park, and it is spectacular. And so I see tons of trees and wildlife, And growing up on a farm, I'm so attuned to what nature has to offer. And so a lot of my original landscape work is that intimacy with nature. And I find my inspiration in the strangest places, Dave. You know, it's just a matter of inhaling and taking that all in. And my goal as a person, as an artist, and a member of this giant planet, is to kind of give back and say, this is how I see it. And so those, when I paint, you know, from my garden in particular, I'm a plein air painter, which is, I love working outside. And just the inspiration of those plants and the magic in them. And so if I try to capture that, because it tickles something in me, you know, it just ignites that awe of something greater than what we are. And so doing those landscape paintings is just that, capturing the light and capturing the essence of a plant in particular. So I do a lot of florals in that impressionist genre. You know, in the wintertime, I'll do some more detailed stuff, you know, very photo detail. And that's where I thought, well, this is getting boring. You know, I can take a picture of this in 2 seconds and have that image. And so that's where you get that inspiration. It says, why share this with somebody? Why capture this moment in time as a painter? And so that inspiration, you know, is imbued with like spirit and energy and the brushstrokes that I've learned from studying, you know, the impressionists. And so that's where it takes me, you know.
So that eventually led you to take a close look at the ceilings and the walls of the Sistine Chapel. Actually, it's a ceiling in one wall.
Correct.
One wall has Michelangelo's painting, and the rest of it's all on the ceiling, which he had to paint while he was lying on his back.
That's right.
On
right.
A scaffold.
That's quite a job. It's incredible. It is. That's one of my life goals. You know, is to get over there and see all this incredible stuff.
I saw it, but it was quite a few years ago, and it was they were just finalizing plans to restore it, so it tells you how long ago it was. And there was some controversy over that. You know, do we leave it the way it is? It was kind of dirty and smoky. Mm-hmm. They burned a lot of candles and incense in that chapel, and they finally decided to restore it and clean it up. It took several years, and I have not seen the, it's much brighter now than it
is. Oh, yeah, absolutely. As a country, I mean, Italy has done, you know, Smithsonian Magazine did a big cover on them, and how incredible that they have taken, you know, these grand staircases and places like the Sistine Chapel and the fountains and just cleaned them up for us, you know, without any damage, but it's preserving them, you know, those toxic chemicals, the pollutants that corrodes the surfaces. And so by cleaning them up, it's given them a breath of fresh life and that the value and respect that they deserve from those master painters and carvers.
Are you one of those painters who uses a limited palette? Do you lay out like 6 colors and then that's it? You mix everything else?
Nope. Dave, it's funny, and I've always taught my kids this. You know, you can draw on a napkin. So when you paint, people think, oh, they have to have this and that. I use aluminum pie pans for my palette. And being an acrylics painter, you know, I just kind of set out a handful, but I've got bottle after bottle of tube of colors. And so I'll pick and I relate to color differently at different times of the year. Right now I'm in this aqua mode sort of, and it's just a refreshing spring type color. And I strive for vibrancy. I strive for that visual impact, you know. And one of the things I would encourage people to do is go into your living room, take a peek at what's hanging on your wall. Could you tell Dave and I here what's there without even going to look at it? And I think sometimes we get so used to things being comfy. So come on down. Maybe you'll take home a new piece of artwork and switch it out and say, wow, let's switch a color. And I think that's where we get comfortable and don't want to change things. So by bringing a new piece of artwork in or just switching things out of what you have, you'll notice it more. You'll get a better connection to why you have that piece in the beginning, in the first place. You know, take the time to look at it, you know, and just see why you did it. What's your inspiration for it?
Do you paint at the same time every day? Are you up early and paint, or you paint late? Or
I have a tendency to paint late. I get my thoughts in, where I'm going, or during the morning hours. I dedicate probably 5 hours a day to this upcoming show and to where I'm going with my work.
So it takes a while. I've talked to writers who, many of them, the majority seem to have a regular routine. They want to write so many pages a day, or they want to devote so many hours a day to their writing. So you do the same with your painting.
Similar, but this is, I work on board, Luan board actually, and so I go to Lowe's and buy my boards, and then I have to cut them to size, and then prep them and sand them and prep gesso them, and so I have a lot of pieces ready to go. Mm-hmm. And it's like when I see a blank canvas, it's like, oh wow, who's coming in? Who's going to show up on that? You know, like Michelangelo. I mean, I'm not comparing myself, God forbid, to Michelangelo, but he would look at a block of marble and say, oh, I see who's in there. You know, here comes the David. You know, nobody wanted that block of marble for the David. Mm-hmm. You know, they were scared of it, actually. And he took it on and said, I'm taking away and I'm, bringing forth what's inside, you know. And so when I look at a blank canvas, and this is a little odd. For me as a painter, I can be disciplined. And that's what I did this winter, is I taught myself portraiture. You know, I'm 60 years old, and